The U.S. dollar has lost 85% of its value since the 70s, when the dollar decoupled from gold, and the government seems bent on continuing the tradition. Charlie Kirk here. From now until after the elections, the government can print as much money as they want. The last time they did that, inflation went up 9%. Gold is the only asset that has proven to withstand inflation. Invest in gold with Noble Gold Investments. You will get a 24-karat, 1/4 ounce gold standard coin for free. Just use promo code Kirk. Go to noblegoldinvestments.com. That's noblegoldinvestments.com, the only gold company I trust. Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, thought crimes. Okay, I'll give you a little warning. This is a very chaotic episode of thought crimes. We're in like 9 different cities. We're all talking over each other. It's fun, but it's a little bit of a mess. So enjoy it. Listen to it. And yes, I know it's a little bit of a clumsier episode. We talk about a different type of thought crime. We talk about Barbie and Oppenheimer, the Michigan alternate elector, and also a recap of ActCon. Text this episode to your friends. Get involved with Turning Point USA at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Also, become a member. We have a new way you could support the program. Don't worry, all you that support us at charliekirk.com/support. Don't worry, we have a migration plan for all of you. Legal migration, of course. But I wanted to say thank you for those of you that are joining in huge numbers. It's amazing. At members.charliekirk.com. It's a way for you to support our program. We believe it's affordable for all income levels. It's a way for you guys to get behind the work we are doing. Members.charliekirk.com. In fact, I want to mention and name some of the people that became members overnight. It's really exciting. Janet from California, thank you for becoming a member at members.charliekirk.com. Mary Lisa from Idaho, thank you. Janet from California, Scott from Utah, Linda from California, Dorothy from Maryland. There are levels for all types, by the way. You guys could check it out. $8 a month. Members.charliekirk.com. Maybe you're on a fixed income, but I bet you could squeeze $8 a month. And you might say, well, what do I get, Charlie? Well, we're doing exclusive Zoom calls. We're going to have a message board. We're developing all this stuff. And you get to hear the full conversation with the legend, Tucker Carlson. Here's a little tease. We talk about this sometimes. Your faith, has it strengthened? Have you grown closer, farther apart from God? Not just through this, but just in your 7 years from Fox, because you do talk more spiritually, especially in the last couple of years.
I probably shouldn't because, I mean...
Well, I love it.
You
personally
don't want to take spiritual advice from me.
Well, I'll be honest, Tucker. I don't take spiritual advice from Episcopalians.
Good. You shouldn't. Trust me.
When an Episcopalian tells me about the Bible, I say, stop.
No. Well, but trust me. No Episcopalian's ever going to tell you about the Bible.
No, they'll tell you about their feelings.
Yeah,
or
no,
some
it's
social
totally
justice,
right.
Waterworks
or lie
project.
About it. And I was talking about this last night, actually. I've been, just for my own interest, reading the Bible since February. And
it's beautiful.
It's just so interesting. It's the most interesting thing I've ever read.
It's like, the whole civilization's based on it.
It's completely blowing my mind.
Become a member at members.charliekirk.com. Email me, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com, and listen to the end of this episode for a giveaway opportunity. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the Loan Experts I Trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. Welcome to Thought Crimes, everybody, aptly named and mentioned by Tucker Carlson, which is our first segment today. Andrew Colvett joins us. The ever popular Blake Neff. I have people coming up to me all over the time, sending me dating resumes for Blake. And Jack Posobiec, who is in Bedminster, New Jersey. There's a lot going on. Jack, what are you doing in Bedminster?
Charlie, I'm over here because as we are taping this episode today, we are just a few hours away from the historic presidential screening of the film A Sound of Freedom with President Trump, Tim Ballard, Eduardo Verástegui, and a number of people involved with the film here present on the Bedminster property.
Well, very good. We have a lot to go through today and to cover. The first topic, we were all at Turning Point's Action Conference, ActCon,
Andrew, I want you to kick it off. You handle all the PR, media, do a great job. You've been to dozens of these events. I think this is an event unlike any other. Certainly had its challenges in some ways, but its blessings for sure. Andrew, ACTCON, your reaction. Winners, losers, people who ended up in the middle. Andrew Colvet.
Yeah, no, this was, I think, Charlie, you would agree, of all the events that we've executed on, this was probably right up there with the top two most challenging. The other one being 2020 at this same venue, during COVID. And we reluctantly returned to this venue thinking that maybe that was just a COVID era thing. But listen, there was some line issues that the Secret Service didn't help with, but I really don't want to focus on any of that. I mean, it was there. We did a great job, I think, dealing with it live in real time. But I will tell you that the biggest winner is Donald Trump from ACTCON. There's no doubt. But the second biggest winner is Vivek Ramaswamy, who won basically the second choice vote in the straw poll, which I think surprised a lot of people. That was a massive, massive deal. The electricity in the crowd, I mean, if you go through social media and you look at it, there's no other event in the conservative landscape like the events that Turning Point's able to pull off. I mean, the welcome for Trump, the welcome for Vivek, Bongino, Bannon, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Boebert, Gates, Hawley, J.D. Vance, Senator Cruz. I mean, there's really nothing like it. The lineup is beyond the pale. And then, hey, listen, the big loser here is Governor Ron DeSantis. I'm a Governor Ron DeSantis fan. I've been really open about that. You know, we are behind Trump in 2024, but we certainly are not in the business of trashing Governor Ron DeSantis or getting in the mud. Some people are. There's a whole thing going on social media that you guys, I'm sure, are very well aware of. But listen, we like the governor. We have a lot of respect for what he's done in Florida. But I will tell you, a lot of people say that this was a setup. We were just trying to get Governor Ron DeSantis there so he would get booed and heckled. That is a complete and utter lie. We would have rolled out the red carpet for him. I was personally involved in working with his team to get him in at that event in Florida. It didn't work out. It looks like they're dealing with some other things in their campaign, some financial things we can certainly talk about. But listen, he would have performed, I believe, 5x as well as he did had he just shown up. The rumor mill, the whisper mill that was going on before the event really soured a lot of people on Governor Ron DeSantis. They wanted him there, and they would have rewarded him had he come. And I think Exhibit A is Vivek Ramaswamy. He got a hero's welcome. He was getting cheered in the after parties. These videos were going viral. And had DeSantis come and owned the moment, shook a lot of hands, rented a room outside, did a party, whatever he wanted to do, he would have owned the moment, and it would have been a big win for him. Unfortunately, he missed that opportunity.
So, Blake, you have a tendency to be contrarian or see things other people don't see. This is your second Turning Point event, your first Turning Point Action event. Blake, you watched from afar. What stood out to you? What did you learn? What surprised you, Blake? Or was it just kind of exactly as you would have expected? Blake Neff.
Thanks, Charlie. I think the overall tone was really similar to it was actually pretty similar to AmFest, which I was at last December. And I think it was about what I expected. You could see the vibe of it is still Donald Trump's Republican Party. I mean, we had all of the candidates' faces out on pasted to a wall in the big area, and people could leave notes on them. And, you know, Trump is in the middle, and all of the notes on his are, you know, overwhelmingly positive. And then emanating out from that, you have all the other candidates' faces, and there's fans for each of them, but definitely, I think, more criticism than praise. And, you know, even with Vivek, you know, Vivek did really well, but Vivek was really, what he was is he was cementing himself as like a bonus Trump, a Trump alternative, the guy that if Trump, you know, somehow goes to jail or is incapacitated, you know, he could be the guy who steps up in his place, or he could be a Trump vice presidential pick. And like, that's very much what he's running for, as opposed to like, I should unseat Trump or displace Trump in any way. And so then he comes out as the big, you know, winner besides Trump himself. But I think the funniest part of the aftermath for me, and, you know, really a fitting symbolism, is that Ron DeSantis decides, I'm not going to go to ACTCON. I'm going to do my own thing. I'm going to go to Iowa. I'm going to play to the national media. And part of the strategy was, I'm going to do this big CNN interview on Monday night. And then he just ends up getting, you know, shoved out of the news cycle because Jack Smith news with Trump completely replaces him and makes that a bigger deal instead of whatever DeSantis was going to say. And what did he say? I don't even recall.
No, and that, I mean, so we're kind of master clip watchers here, meaning that when there's clips of anything that's interesting between kind of our collective group chats, we kind of have a good pulse on it, right? If there's riots, if there's something happening in Ukraine, if there's a wacky thing said by a candidate, we kind of have our eyeballs on it. There was only one clip that was shared, and that was DeSantis on the woke military with Jake Tapper, and that was it. Jack, I think the most newsworthy item, though, out of the Turning Point Action Conference that I think is still making waves is we asked the question, and I was responsible for the wording of the question, and I made it intentionally explicit because we could have worded the question of, are you in favor of sending aid to Ukraine? Are you in favor of helping Ukraine against Russia? The way that we worded it, and I want to make sure I get it right, I believe is, do you believe that U.S. should be involved at all in the war in Ukraine? 95.8% of our attendees said no. Jack, how should we think about this?
Well, Charlie, this is something that actually stood out to me a lot. And I remember standing there in the room as you were reading out the numbers, because what stood out to me so much, look, people thought that Trump was going to come in first place, and he did, and that wasn't a shock. But Trump, in a sense, actually came in second place in the Turning Point straw poll for Turning Point Action. Why do I say that? Because Trump got 85%. Opposition to U.S. involvement in Ukraine actually polled 10 points higher than support to Trump. And so that means that there may have been people that were maybe giving their vote to Vivek, maybe some of the DeSantis supporters, that this is actually something that aligns the base of the party. And certainly you can look at Turning Point Action as a barometer for the base in the United States. And it's not just Republican. There's an independent. There's even maybe even some Democrats in there, that there is actually stronger opposition to U.S. involvement. And I understand exactly why you worded the question the way that you worded the question, because you didn't say boots on the ground, you didn't say money, you didn't say financing, you didn't say volunteering, et cetera, et cetera. You said involvement, because it becomes then a catch-all term. And we're not going to break this out. Look, Richard Barris can go to that. I'm sure he'll be able to come out with some very detailed responses. But you weren't looking for that. You were looking for the big overall most important number. And I'll even ask you, Charlie, were you surprised to see the number that high?
Yeah, and actually we did a similar one at AmFest and last year, where we asked the question of what matters more, the U.S. southern border or Ukraine? And I think the answer, I mean, it's such kind of a layup question. It's not even fairly composed, because of course most people are going to say the southern border. I think 93% last year said southern border, or 94%. This beat that, Jack. And I mean, you can't get 95% of anybody in a room to agree on anything,
yeah,
right? Let alone this. And so, Jack, but what frustrates me the most is 99% of Republican politicians support what their voters oppose. That's unsustainable, Jack. Your reaction?
Well, it's all right. It's completely unsustainable. And I think Mike Pence found that out on Friday when he was on stage with Tucker, and then caught himself up in cross statements where Tucker asked him basically a similar question the way you phrased it. He didn't say the border, but he talked about U.S. cities, the completely deplorable state of our cities, the graffiti, the violence spiraling out of control into the suburbs, into the rural areas. And Pence throws something out there where it sounded like he was saying, that's not my concern. Now, his campaign's trying to walk it out and say, well, no, I wasn't concerned about the tanks, and we could do both, et cetera. But he was caught in that trap, because it's a trap of his own making. And that's the point that Tucker was making. That's the point that you made later on Twitter, that so many of us later made on Twitter, that the broader truth here is that so many of these Republican politicians are campaigning like it's the 1980s, like we're going up against the Soviet Union, like this is an existential crisis to the United States, who controls the Donbass Basin of eastern Ukraine and the Crimea Peninsula, when you've got people actually here in the United States that I think, and by the way, this also came up in the Echelon Insights poll, and we were going back and forth with David Sacks and the guys that run Echelon, because they pointed out that Ukraine is actually polling number 17 nationwide when it comes to priorities for 2024. Number 17. I haven't gotten the full list yet. I've been meaning to do so, but I've been traveling, as I know you have been. And I really want to find out all the 16 things that are ahead of U.S. involvement in Ukraine.
I will say that's a little deceiving, though, and it's only deceiving because when I filled out my straw poll answer, I ranked the war in Ukraine as the top issue, but it's not involvement in the war in Ukraine, it's ending the war in Ukraine. And so I think it's in some ways a deceiving question, because I think, Jack, you and I would agree that it's a top concern of whether or not we stay involved in it. Andrew, also notable out of this, the straw poll results, was the lack of confidence in the RNC. 77% of people said they don't plan to vote, donate to the RNC. Andrew, the RNC is now trying everything they can to try to get Donald Trump to debate in the upcoming debate in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Andrew, audience was not very supportive of the RNC in any way.
No, I mean, actually, one of the things that hasn't gotten a lot of pub, Charlie, is one of the questions, like, are you excited about the upcoming debates? The RNC primary debates used to be must-watch, absolute mandatory television time, appointment viewing. We didn't make a big deal about this, but it was only like 58% of the audience was excited about them. That's barely a majority, right? Now, Trump, and listen, the RNC got shellacked on, are you going to donate to them? It was nearly 80%. I think it was 77% of people said they weren't going to donate. And I want to make one other comment about those issues list, because I think it goes straight back to this constant establishment assault against Donald Trump. And that's the top issue. The top issue was still the southern border and immigration. If you remember when Trump came down the golden escalator, he said, listen, they're sending rapists. They're not sending their best. And I assume some are good people. Remember what a big deal that was, how it pushed the Overton window. Back before Trump, we weren't allowed to talk about illegal immigration and legal immigration and who's coming into our country. These were third rail topics. He changed that topic, but guess that debate and the way it was framed. But guess what? All these years later, it's still the most important topic. The number one topic is still immigration. It will always be a winning issue with the base, with nationalist, populist, conservative voters, and it remains so today. So they will continually try and turn this issue into such a they'll demonize people that advocate for border security and all these things. It's still the top issue. And Trump knew it all the way back in 2015, and he's still leading on it right now. So I just wanted to call that out. I think it's really interesting. But yeah, I mean, to your earlier point, the RNC is a big loser. You know, Ronna McDaniel, it appears to me that she may have won the battle to remain chair of the RNC, but she's losing the war. The RNC is, we're hearing rumors that they are massively bleeding capital, that they don't have enough money, and you know they've got a brand problem. And unless they do something really drastic, like hey, a different chair, or they start working with groups like Turning Point Action to do ballot harvesting or something, I don't see them getting out of it, which is a really big problem heading into 2024. There's no doubt about it.
All right, I want to tell our audience about one of our partners, and then we are going to get into Jason Aldean. And my opinions of country music are well known, but I will repeat them. If you think you got mad at me for the corn takes last week, just wait till you hear my country music opinions. I do not say what I say to be popular. I say what I say because it's true. Okay, I want to tell you about this particular partner here. Where is it? Andrew, you said it in the chat somewhere. I'm really excited to share this. It's around here. Ah, there it is. Okay. I want to share this with you. It's opening. And by the way, I'm in a room that is 119 degrees. I'm not kidding. It's unbelievable. Terrell here is sticking to the chair, and they brought in some sort of a fan. It's really been a long month this week. Okay.
Charlie,
do you need better sleep? Well, 90% of Oh, that's very kind, Blake. That's great. So 90% of customers report better sleep with CBD. Could you use more Calm? Now, look, I don't like marijuana. That stuff's a bunch of crap, okay? THC, shouldn't get high. If you do, you're a loser. Stop doing it. This is different, okay? So check all your biases. And I asked all the tough questions. Producer Andrew, did I not? We had a big onboarding call, right? I asked all the tough questions about what's going on, where does it come from. This is not THC. It's not drugs, okay? It's different. CBD helps with stress and anxiety. If you're suffering with pain after exercise, 80% report less pain after physical activity. Enjoy better focus and concentration even. You know, people with back pain and that kind of pain, they report big, big benefits. Full range of carefully formulated CBD and other plant-based solutions, packed with whole-body healing plant compounds and vital nutrients. 100% clean ingredients, no artificial flavors or preservatives. Recommended by Dr. Kevin Free, Mayo Clinic-trained internist and preventative health specialist. Over 2 million satisfied customers. If you're frustrated with a health concern that's not getting better, try CBD from the source I trust, CB Distillery. That's cbdistillery.com. Let me get you on the right path with my 20% discount. It says POSO here, but that can't be right. Don't use that crap. cbdistillery.com. It's got to be Kirk or Charlie or something else. If that, I guess if you have to use POSO. I don't know why they're sending me that stuff. He gets enough promo codes, all of my pillow stuff. Can I win one promo code war? I lose the jack in every promo code competition. cbdistillery.com. That is...
It's promo code Kirk.
All right. Promo code Kirk. Promo code POSO will make it double. Okay. It will increase the price by two. So go to cbdistillery.com, promo code Kirk. Okay. Many of you know that I am not a fan of country music. In fact, I think I think that country music is noise that happens to rhyme. However, a lot of people like country music. I do like country music culture, and I like people who like country music. And so I have all those kind of different, let's just say, takes on that. I've got a chance to meet a lot of country music artists, and I think the world of many of them, including Jason Aldean. This is a fascinating story. Andrew, you're kind of our resident country music admirer or fan, so I'm going to kind of let you carry the water here. What's going on with Great American Patriot, Good Man, very talented artist Jason Aldean?
Well, he's getting attacked by the likes of Sheryl Crow and others. And then he had his music video, Try That in a Small Town, taken down by CMT, it looks like. And so, you know, it's not to me. I listen to it. I think most of our audience would listen to it. And I think we have some clips from the music video, and we'll find those in just a second. But shouldn't be controversial. He's just saying, like almost every other country music song says, that, hey, small town values are the best, and we don't let people get away with, you know, spitting the cops' faces and trashing the liquor store in the small town. Try that in a small town. It's a little aggressive, maybe. Like, you know, you're gonna get your butt kicked if you try and mess with our town. But like, listen, that's the way of the world. That's what really happens, you know. And Sheryl Crow is saying, hey, we don't like violence in small towns either. It's like, no, that's not what he's saying. He's saying, if you want to sow discord, sow chaos in our town, and you want to come and riot about some trumped up phony baloney racial, trans, whatever the thing is of the week in our town, we're not going to let it happen. So anyways, I think a lot of people resonate with the lyrics. It's now number one on the charts. So conservatives are rallying behind it. Let's just say this. I talked with Jason Aldean actually backstage at AmFest last year. Nicest guy. Nicest guy. Him and his wife are the real deal. Yeah, they're total blue chips in the conservative or the country music sort of ecosystem. It doesn't get much bigger than them. I think right now it's basically Morgan Wallen might have an edge on him, and that's about it. And by the way, Morgan Wallen and Jason Aldean are really good friends. And so I think what's going to be interesting to see here is what happens to CMT and what happens to these woke country artists that are getting behind some of this stuff, like Christina Ballerini or whatever her name was, where she at the CMT Music Awards, where she performed with a bunch of drag queens on stage. Everybody, you know, the woke CMT Awards. So it's pretty appalling, actually, that this seems to be gaining traction. Like, he was calling for lynching or something. I mean, when I listen to the song, I don't hear it at all. at all. And he also, Jason Aldean, went on social media to say that, in fact, these were all actual the crime footage that's in the video. It's actual news reporting. So he didn't doctor anything. He didn't take anything out of context. It's just the scenes of, you know, the BLM riots and the Antifa stuff. So I think it's much ado about nothing. You know, conservatives have to put up with liberals that we hate their music, or we hate their ideas, but we love their music. And then, you know, they're having one freak out of one conservative country music star.
Well, let's bring that up, Andrew. Let's bring up a 97. Put it on screen.
Yes,
yeah, I think I got this shared from 8 different people over the last night. If you can't read it, it's conservatives listening to their favorite band that hates them, which is, if you're like me and listen to like deranged heavy metal music from the 80s, a very common experience. And then, you know, the poor liberals who have encountered one song from an artist they don't like, and they have died a tragic death, and then they will rise and they will try to burn down another city and probably a small town too now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, beware if you're a small town. We do have clips from this, I believe. So let's play a couple clips from the actual music video. Cut 73.
Cuss out a cop, spit in his face, scope on the flag and light it up. Yeah, you think it's tough? Well, try that in a small town. See how far you make it down the road. Around here we take it.
All right, is it over? Is it over? All right, I'm gonna put back in my earphone now. I'm with Charlie on the country music question. It's not for me.
I'm right there with you, Blake. But I have too much respect for Jason Aldean and his strong stances to give my editorialized opinion. Jack, how should we think about this? Jack, I can't. Are you really a country music fan?
So I actually have a funny story about that as well. Because Charlie, I think I'm more in your camp where I'm probably not going to be listening to country music if you give me the choice. Look, I'm from Philadelphia area. You know, we grew up with rock. We grew up with metal, that kind of stuff. I'm a Primus guy, Sabaton, Smashing Pumpkins. Seen David Bowie like 5 times. That's country's not my thing. But when Tanya came to the United States from the Soviet Union, for some reason, which I haven't quite gotten the story on this, she fell in love with country music. And so when we first started dating, she would always say that if I wanted to go out with her, I had to take her to country concerts. So I was like, well, I decided to bite the bullet. I said it's worth it. And ended up seeing a bunch of the same acts that later I would get to meet and see at America Fest when Tanya and I were just dating like a decade ago now.
You know, that's actually pretty amazing, Jack, because I've read the same thing in like rural Africa, like Kenya, northern Kenya, like Tanzania, Nigeria, tons of those places. Like old U.S. country is really popular. Like you can find videos of them at these African weddings, and they're all dancing very energetically to Johnny Cash, Willie Nelson, like older country classics like that. And it really, you know, it speaks to them. Like it's a very similar lifestyle. Like a lot of them are ranchers in rural areas with kind of, you know, more old fashioned values.
Wait, so I like Johnny Cash. I like Willie Nelson.
Oh yeah, but then they get the later stuff too. They're also getting our modern country music as well. And so, you know, it's like it is like a global appeal, and I kind of like that. I like that. In a lot of places, the American culture that travels best is like golden age, like 80s Reagan America, like these people who love, you know, roller coasters and pro wrestling. And in a weird way, I guess it's like, you know, it's like the ones who like old anime shows. And so, yeah, then they love old country music shows, country music acts, too. I'd rather have that be traveling than whatever we're putting out today.
Am I the only country music fan on this panel right now? You guys are a bunch of losers.
Hopefully, yeah. No,
I'm telling you, I grew up from a ranching family in northern Nevada. Yeah, you guys are all losing out, missing out. I grew up in a ranching family from northern Nevada, and I mean, I grew up with George Strait sitting on my dad's, you know, 3/4 ton 76 Chevy pickup truck, sitting on the bench seat, driving down dirt roads, like. baling hay. So, like, you know, you guys just don't get it yet. And, you know, that's fine. But here's one thing I don't get behind as a country fan. Let's go ahead and play cut 79. This is from April. Country singer Kelsey Ballerini performs with Drag Race stars and gets some backlash for her wokeness. 79.
Hypothetically, if you ever kill your husband, hands on the Bible.
This music is so bad.
That's bad. I'll admit that's bad. But this is what's interesting. So when we were at Young Women's Leadership Summit, there was a Washington Post reporter there. And this is going to start getting a lot more publicity. There was a Washington Post reporter there that wants to do a whole story on the divide in country music. So Nashville is a traditionally conservative town, but there is this growing divide between like the Maren Morrises and all of this and the Morgan Wallens and the Jason Aldeans. Tim McGraw is apparently exceptionally liberal. So is his wife, Faith Hill. And so there's this big rift erupting in a formerly very conservative town. Garth Brooks just took a bunch of heat for saying that we're going to serve Bud Light at his bar. And, you know, all these a-holes that are trying to turn, you know, politicize the trans issue or whatever. I forget exactly what he said. There's a massive divide happening, but I mean, listen, if I'm a country, if I'm in the country music business, I would just say, watch yourself, because if you're going to go on the woke stuff, if you're going to go on the progressive agenda within country music, you are instantly parting ways with, I would say, 80% of your fan base. So it's a losing battle for them. And I don't know why they're doing it. Maybe they think they're on some holy crusade. Shout out Steve Bannon. But I just think I don't know why they were doing it as strictly a business proposition. It's a loser.
It is the mind virus of the woke that is infecting all institutions. And I didn't get a chance to see that last clip, but boy, that was hard to listen to. Okay, I think we can now proceed to the next topic that we have here. Yes, the Michigan electors. Blake, what's going on in Michigan?
All right, Charlie. So the big news that hit this week, honestly, I'd say it's like equally as big as the Jack Smith news, you could say, about, you know, where he might charge Trump. The Attorney General of Michigan, Dana Nessel, she has brought charges against 16 different, I would say, electors, prospective electors, whatever you want to say, 16 people in Michigan who signed their names to a certification that they were valid electoral college votes for Donald Trump in 2020. They're being hit with 8 felonies apiece. If you took the maximum penalty for each of the felonies brought against them, which is probably not going to happen, but it's fun to name it, it's up to 85 years in prison, because they have all these fraud charges that are 14 years apiece maximum. And it's all because they claim to be valid electors in 2020 during the dispute over whether Michigan's election was fair, whether there was fraud, whether the ballots were counted correctly, and all of that. And she's 2.5 years after the fact gone and charged all the people involved, who are all in their one or two are in their 50s, but they're almost all in their 60s, 70s, or even their early 80s, and is charging them with this whole raft of fraud offenses to try to put them in prison for saying that they are valid electors. And, you know, the follow on to this is the reason they were doing this is there's a widespread impression that, OK, if there's an election dispute between different slates of electors, at a minimum, both of those electoral slates need to be going through the process like they are valid electors. And under the Constitution plus federal law, it ordains that, you know, there's a set day in December where the Electoral College meets. Each of them assembles in the state capital of their state, casts their ballots, it goes to Congress, and then the vice president counts them. So the Trump campaign recruited all of these people in these contested states. Michigan is the one here, but it's also Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Arizona, and so on. And had them, you know, sign sheets saying, you know, we believe we won this state. We are the valid electors. These are our electoral votes. And the plan is, if Trump succeeds in his legal challenge, then these electoral votes can be counted. And they were doing this because in 1960, there was an election between Richard Nixon and John F. Kennedy. Kennedy won that election, but history fans might know that it was a very close election. And in Hawaii, Nixon won the initial day of count, and his electors got certified. The Kennedy campaign disputed it. They held a recount, and because the recount was still being litigated, there were two slates of electors. There was the official Nixon one and then Kennedy's unofficial one, and they still gathered. They said they're the valid electors. They signed sheets of paper saying this, and they submitted it, and eventually they won. The recount favored Kennedy, and those were the ones that were counted, and a state judge said, yeah, we would have had to throw this out, but it was a good thing you guys met and cast your ballots, so it's allowed to count. And now, you know, 60 years later, Dana Nessel of Michigan comes along and says, this is a felony. You know, have fun with your 85 years in prison.
So let me ask you a question, Blake. Do we know the Trump campaign recruited them? Because that's not always how slates of electors occur. Sometimes it's from the bottom up. This matters a lot because of the looming Jack Smith indictment. By the time this airs, Donald Trump might be indicted. It's almost a certainty. But, Blake, do we know how they were selected, and does that matter?
There was a coordination with the Trump campaign in terms of recruiting. I don't have it all exactly in front of me, but I believe they were recruited working with the Trump campaign, which was coordinating this. They did not do the exact same thing in each state, because in some of them they were more legally gun shy. So some of them did sign statements saying expressly, we're only the electors if the Trump campaign succeeds with its legal challenge. Some of them just did the same thing the Kennedy campaign did and said, we're the valid electors. We claim to be the valid electors. And you kind of just let the courts or the political system sort it out. But they did not, you know, they didn't charge Trump under this. What they did charge them with is fraud for saying, basically for signing a sheet of paper saying, we're the valid electors. And they're like, you know, you're not the valid electors. So that's fraud. It definitely does fit into the broader offensive. I don't think it's a coincidence that these charges are dropping 2.5 years later in the exact same week where Jack Smith might be bringing charges related to January 6th. It'll be interesting to see whether any of this electoral vote stuff plays into any charges that Jack Smith might bring, or if it's more of like tainting the overall media miasma, you know, pushing this whole narrative that Trump was trying to overthrow our democracy. Because they know, like, you know, even if they sequester the jury or do all those procedures they do that are supposed to ensure a fair trial, that they know that if they can get a very strong media narrative of, like, Trump tried to overthrow democracy, Trump tried to do the very bad thing, Trump tried to do a coup d'etat, oh my God, that this will be what they need to do to actually get him convicted and then keep him from running for president, which is, of course, the real point of this.
So let me ask Andrew here. Andrew, this is so cruel. I mean, Andrew, I think you could I can't help but think of just kind of the sweet woman at that, or the, you know, men that are in their 70s or 80s that attend, you know, some of our rallies or events. We saw some at ACTCON, obviously. We had mostly a student audience. Don't you agree, Andrew, that, like, these are normal everyday people that they're trying to break? They're trying to, like, destroy them and put them into a quasi gulag. This is one of the most immoral things I've seen in quite some time, Andrew.
Yeah, I mean, it's so true. I mean, we had, everybody saw that story of the J6 granny just getting thrown into jail or prison. I can't remember if it was jail or prison. But you know, this does kind of reek of that. And to Blake's earlier point, I mean, 2.5 years later, we heard some whispers that the Democrat Attorney General in Arizona is coming after, or at least knocking on some doors. There, we've heard it in Michigan and Nevada earlier. I think the key here is they have to establish that this was centrally organized in this vast right-wing conspiracy to overthrow the election or whatever. I mean, that's such garbage. It's not even, it's laughable. What this was a backup plan, a la 1960, exactly what Blake pointed out. It didn't work. The lawsuits failed, so that these alternate electors never, you know, really had any relevance. But what they're trying to show is that don't believe your lying eyes. Don't believe the clips of Trump saying, go home, we have to remain peaceful. The tweets on January 6th saying, hey, you need to go home, remain peaceful. The speech preceding the march to the Capitol where he said peacefully and patriotically march to the Capitol. Don't believe any of that. Trump was trying to overthrow the government that day. And guess what? Here's the evidence. We've got these alternate slate of electors. That was all part of the plan. Okay, they were part of the plan in as much as if the lawsuits worked. And now you know, these people that pose no threat to the Republic, 80-year-old grannies in Michigan and Arizona, Nevada, wherever else, Georgia, they are now getting charged 2.5 years later in a, I believe, absolute coordination with the federal government, with the Department of Justice and Jack Smith, simply to establish, you know, it's like, who cares if the innocents get thrown under the bus? We've got a bigger goal here, and that's taking out Trump and removing him from the 2024 ballot. And I just want to throw it over to Jack here, because Jack had a clip that went mega viral. I saw it multiple places, Jack. You are predicting some pretty horrible stuff if they're able to successfully execute this strategy that looks like it's coming straight from Merrick Garland, DOJ, Jack Smith.
Yeah, Andrew, what's going on here is that I've been following very closely the plan that Norm Eisen, now you may remember Norm Eisen from the Election Integrity Partnership. You remember him from the color revolutions that he was involved in with the State Department in Eastern Europe. The same guy has been laying out since all the way back in last November, working with these left-wing academic legal journals, stating essentially his plan is as thus. They are going to create a series of indictments, a sweeping series of indictments of supporters, people in Trump's inner circle, the alternate electors, which we know were being done and being looked at as a legal challenge. This was directly tied to the potential legal challenge on January 6th. This also, by the way, I'm just going to say it because, you know, I don't know why nobody else wants to admit this anymore. Mike Pence was not asked to overturn the election. Mike Pence was asked to send back the ballots to a specific set of states after a debate that was supposed to be held in the well of the Senate. Obviously, we know history didn't follow that course. But when Mike Pence says, I was asked to overturn that election, that's a lie, because that's not what he was asked. It was asked to have this debate on these legal challenges that people were playing out. And the establishment has now come in and decided to basically say, we're going to criminalize your ability to debate. We're going to criminalize your ability to dissent, to protest. We're going to throw grandma in jail. Democrats will do this. Republicans will get worried about, you know, the wording of a press release while Democrats are running around locking up 80-year-olds in Michigan. Pawpaw, Michigan. Rose Rook, 81 years old of Pawpaw, Michigan. That's what Democrats are willing to do. And don't think for a second that they wouldn't go Romanoff family on every single one of us if they could. Certainly the four of us on this podcast. And so when I said their plan is going forward with Norm Eisen, what do they want to do? And he said this publicly. He wants to file charges against President Trump for seditious conspiracy, using all of this together in unison as a seditious conspiracy against the United States. It triggers the 14th Amendment, the disqualification clause to the Constitution, and then try to strip Trump from the ballot in all 50 states. And I talked about this publicly on the main stage at Turning Point Action there in West Palm last week. I said it's quite simply, and I don't want this to happen. I want to be very clear. I do not want this to happen. But if you strip Donald Trump from the ballot in 50 states or in any state, this will blow this country apart at the seams.
They really are going to extra constitutional measures here. Now, Blake, if you were to predict the Jack Smith indictment on this one, do you think that alternate electors and then getting convicted of that, is that what the spirit of the 14th Amendment would be? Legally, do you think that could potentially prevent Donald Trump from becoming president if he were to win?
Well, the timing would be interesting because every other case against Trump has been elongated, so it'll be very close with the election itself. And anything Jack Smith brings, like he can, if Trump becomes president, he can pardon himself. It could be, we're just in such uncharted territory here, and I think the fact they're willing to even attempt this shows that essentially anything is on the table, that if they're willing to try these totally novel charges to basically say that President Trump launched an insurrection against the government while head of the government, that they'd be willing to try a lot of stunts with the federal judiciary to try to rush this through and then try to get a conviction and then try to disqualify him. And the thing is they only need him disqualified for like a short window of time to basically wreck everything. Like, we've seen this play out before. You might remember Senator Ted Stevens from Alaska, where they sort of, I don't want to say like framed, but they railroaded him really aggressively on various criminal charges, just long enough for him to lose a reelection race and get knocked out of office. And then it all fell apart, and it turned out to all be a sham the entire time. And I think they could easily do this with Trump, where they get him on these insurrection charges and get him disqualified just long enough for, you know, then some appeals court or the Supreme Court will say, no, this is a wild abuse of prosecutorial power, and they throw it out. But too late. The 2024 election's over, and now Biden or Kamala or heaven knows who is now the president of the United States after our 100% free and fair election in our democracy, as they like to call it.
I just want to I just want to stop and like talk about what Jack just said, because I think it bears repeating. I mean this really is the question. Will they succeed in this? I mean, you could indict a ham sandwich, right? Isn't that the famous expression with a grand jury? He's going to get indicted, but will this spark? I mean, if you think January 6th was bad, will this spark something similar or even worse if they're able to successfully remove Donald Trump from the ballot? I mean, I don't see this ending well. And I think your warning, Jack, is I'm not endorsing it. I want everything to be peaceful. I want us to all remain calm. And, you know, but if you remove the leading opposition candidate from the ballot via a technical maneuver and a legal maneuver, this could be devastating. I don't see how this ends in a good place.
You know, Andrew, that is potentially what could be the most dangerous outcome of all of this, because look, Vivek talked about it on the debate stage in Iowa. He talked about it in West Palm at the Turning Point event, that when you tell people they're not allowed to dissent, when you tell people they're not allowed to protest, when you tell people you're not allowed to listen, then you tell people you're not even allowed to vote for your preferred candidate, this is what leads to people to logically conclude, and I'm not saying, again, I don't want this, but you're telling people that the ballot box is not the place to relieve the pressure. Well, what happens if people then start looking for other means to get involved in the political process than voting?
Blake, walk us through this next topic. We have Oppenheimer v. Barbie. I couldn't care less. So, Blake, make me care.
Oh, that's where you go wrong, Charlie. This is very important. We have two extremely major films coming out this week. One of them is very ominous, very serious, very dark, very historical and important. And the other is a movie about Robert Oppenheimer designing the atomic bomb. So, of course, we have Oppenheimer. It's the next Chris Nolan movie. He's the guy who did the Dark Knight trilogy of Batman films. He did Interstellar. He did, I'm drawing a blank. The movie where they go inside a dream, Inception. He did Inception. He did Dunkirk. And now he's got Oppenheimer. And then we also have Barbie. It stars Margot Robbie, which is why everyone is debating whether she's mid or not. It has Ryan Gosling as Ken. So it's kind of bizarre that they actually decided to make this movie, let alone give it a huge budget and release it opposite a Chris Nolan movie. But they did. And it's as a result, there's been a lot of mimetic energy. Oh, did I get it wrong? Oh, I got the name wrong. Ah, that shows how much I know. That shows how much I know my movie stars. It's Carly Bonn. I've been notified that I just got the star wrong. I don't care. This shows how much I know Hollywood people. I don't see a lot of movies, but oh, did I get it wrong again? Gosh dang it, you guys are killing me. You guys are killing me. You guys are killing me. You guys are distracting me with your lies. You're distracting me with your lies when I am correct. Anyway, this shows how little I know about Hollywood. Yes, this, look. This is, the point of this is I don't see that many movies, but I will see both Oppenheimer and Barbie back to back when they come out, probably. Unless Barbie's really, truly, astonishingly off the charts bad, which it is It probably will be, actually. But assuming it is, like, tolerable enough that I can just, like, buy a thing of Milk Duds and, like, endure it, I will probably see it, and then I will contrast it with Oppenheimer. And they've had a lot of fun with this. We showed the joint poster for both of them just a second ago. It's rare that we've had these random summer blockbusters, and I think people are having a lot of fun that both of them are just... They're new movies to some extent. They're not, like, the 80th incarnation of the Marvel Cinematic Universe or some abominable reboot of Twilight or Harry Potter or whatever. And so it's a lot of fun.
I want to see... I actually haven't seen this yet. Let's play Cut 92. This is Ryan Gosling's song, I'm Just Ken, from Barbie.
I just don't know who I am without you.
You're Ken.
But it's Barbie and Ken. There is no just Ken.
Doesn't seem to matter what I do. I'm always number two. No one knows how hard I tried. Oh, oh, I have feelings that I can't explain. Driving me insane.
That was the man who starred in The Notebook and also The Ides of March and like a million other movies. And now he's Ken.
Wait, the people are missing out on our chat. Yeah, everybody's like, can we edit this out? Oh, well. I mean, this is the big debate. It's pretty cringy.
Was that a parody?
No, it wasn't. It was.
I don't understand. They're like a couple weeks late for Pride Month. They were so close.
Yeah, you know, it's fun. It's easy to make fun of it, but it's like, could a Barbie movie be anything else? Like a live action Barbie movie where we're just going to take these big stars, pay them $100 million, shove them out in the middle of July. Like a Barbie movie's got to be really stupid. And like Ken is kind of stupid and kind of gay and all of that. Like,
wait, speaking of gay, Jack Posobiec.
No, Ken has always been gay. Ken has always been gay.
I'm glad you know that, Jack. Jack.
Jack. You made some headlines earlier this week. You reacted to Obama's letter with something pretty striking, I believe.
What for when he was? You mean for when he was coming out as gay?
Yes.
No, all I did was congratulate him. I'm not the one who came out. He was the one who came out. So I just wanted to congratulate him on that.
Fair enough. For people who don't know what we're talking about, it was Obama
because
wrote
he
a
said,
letter to librarians.
I mean, yeah. we'll need a whole show segment about, you know, what his biographer unearthed, where, you know, he wrote this letter where Obama wrote a letter to his girlfriend saying that he opted for heterosexuality because he preferred it was more challenging than a gay relationship. He considered gayness but opted for the greater challenge of a heterosexual relationship. According to the guy who wrote a 1,000 page biography of a young Barack Obama, that is a letter that young Obama wrote. Now, I haven't seen the letter. I don't know if anyone's seen the letter other than him, but it does allegedly exist, and it was put in a biography, and the guy didn't get sued for it, so...
Interesting. I hadn't heard that.
No one read the book. It was 1,000 pages. No one wanted to read 1,000 pages about Barack Obama, including me. So I just skimmed summaries of it. But
1,000 pages. Oh, I thought you said 1,000 words.
No, 1,000 pages. It is the War and Peace of biographies of first black presidents.
Jack, are you chiming in here?
I bet Barack Obama has Barbie dolls.
Well, I mean, yeah, he probably does.
Oh, man, this show's getting off the rails.
Let's play Oppenheimer.
You are the man who gave them the power to destroy themselves.
It's happening, isn't it?
You know, Nolan.
Now, this
likes...
is a film I might actually see. Go ahead, whoever's talking. It's like echolocation.
Yeah, Chris Nolan loves his like timeline bending movies, like Inception, Interstellar, Tenet. So it could be that Oppenheimer is going to have a plot twist where they're building the atomic bomb because Oppenheimer, through a time portal, saw the Barbie movie, or at least the Ken song that Ryan Gosling did, and he decided he had to destroy the planet.
Wait, so was Oppenheimer gay as well?
Well, he was a
I'm not actually sure
he
on
was
that.
A communist.
Does Ben know?
Like, he possibly sold
Blake,
out America
explain this.
To the... Oppenheimer possibly sold out America to the Soviets. I mean, people he knew definitely leaked our nuclear secrets to the Soviets. Whether you think Oppenheimer did or not is like an unsettled question. I think they lean towards him not doing it, but come on. And then got his security clearance revoked for being like a weak
I mean, that'd be
communist.
Pretty gay if he did.
Yeah, and we've had these this great story where I'll have to censor this a bit, but supposedly after we dropped the atomic bomb, Oppenheimer, you know, had this moment of realization. He's like, oh no, it turns out Operation Gigabomb 10 million was not a tool of peace. It was a tool of war. And then he goes to President Truman and sobs to him. He's like, we've known sin. And then he leaves, and supposedly Truman turns to I can't remember who and is like, never let that punk in here again. I hate that weepy BS. He didn't drop the bomb. I dropped the bomb. That sort of preachy moralizing makes me sick. And I guess we don't think of President Truman as a hard guy, but it turns out he was definitely harder than J. Robert Oppenheimer was.
That's funny, Blake, because that's what Charlie said the first time he met you in his office.
Why don't we go to the next topic?
All right, the next topic is very fitting for the adventure we've been having here today. It's I guess we'll call it the deep web reveal, though it's actually very shallow because it's a major news story right now, but who cares? So TikTok, as we all know, needs to be destroyed. Its servers need to be blown up. It's the people who work there need to be shipped off to a distant facility where they're contained safe from the rest of humanity. Because the trend on TikTok right now is NPC videos. Now, I don't know if any of you guys are aware what NPCs are because you have like lives and stuff. But an NPC it's in a video game. It means non-player character. And as you might expect, in most video games, they don't have non-player characters do that much. They kind of only say a handful of things, and they have kind of exaggerated character motions, you know, like they'll just sort of, you know, take a pose like this. And people on TikTok have decided to make entire videos behaving like this. I think we have a montage of them. So let's play number 95.
Hey. That's a lot of wait. Hot dog party, hot dog party, hot dog party.
You have captured my heart. Mmm, they smell so wonderful. You have captured my heart.
Ooh, spicy hot.
Hello.
Hello.
Fire.
Hot, hot.
It's delicious and nutritious. Thanks for the corn. It's delicious and nutritious. Thanks for the pepper.
Oh my gosh.
I'll let Charlie react to that, actually. Charlie, you're pure. You have no idea what this is. What's your reaction to it?
I'm the most out of touch of everyone. I thought I knew what an NPC was. I thought an NPC was someone that, like, you kill in Grand Theft Auto that's not part of the, like, main...
Well, that's American NPC where we just, you know, you have, like, random, NPCs who you run over with cars. That's more... These people are more like Japanese role-playing game NPCs that you'd run into in, like, a Final Fantasy game or something, or a Zelda game, and they have their own exaggerated characteristics. But I think the bigger question here, Charlie, is having watched that video, was the Declaration of Independence a mistake?
No. But
are you sure,
Charlie? I don't
Charlie?
Quite understand
I mean,
what...
Like, in a way, like, that video was the product of American dominance over the world, that we defeated Japan
Blake,
in World
you raised
War
an interesting
II.
Question.
Or, you know, it was caused by... You know, we... The Declaration of Independence somehow led to this, and so I think we have to accept that Britain should have won the War of Independence and prevented TikTok somehow. It's worth trying, at least.
I suppose Cut 94 is supposed to help this conversation a little bit. Play Cut 94.
Glizzy!
Yum! Yummy! Yes! Yeah! Glancy!
I think that settles it in my favor.
Jack, now everybody wait. Jack, your response.
Well, I can explain. I don't know if we've really explained exactly what it is that we're playing at this point, especially since we're playing some like shorter clips of it. So, Charlie, last week we went through, when we were live together on the same stage, not with me in Bedminster, et cetera, that we talked about thin subs, financial subs, and financial submissives, and pay pigs. So this is very close to OnlyFans style content. It's very similar to OnlyFans style content, only it's taken out the specifically graphic parts of it. And what they're doing is they're paying money to these girls to get them to perform certain actions, and in this case, preset reactions to different, what they're called, gifts or prizes that are being sent. Now, something that people need to understand is that to send them a gift or a prize, it's the same, not the same, but it's same idea as sending a Rumble rant or a super chat or something like that in on a live stream. So there's money involved. And usually it's only, you know, it's like 10 coins and it's like 1 penny per coin or something. Some of these girls, these ethots at this point, are making thousands and thousands of dollars every night while they're doing this. And that reminds me of a great campaign that 4chan ran a couple years ago called the Thought Audit. And the Thought Audit is simply this. These thoughts, Charlie, they're not reporting their earnings to the IRS. So what you've got to do is reach out to them surreptitiously, find out if they're making their returns, and then you can go to the IRS and collect a bounty on the ethots. We can actually make money by taking them in to the feds.
So wait, you're saying people need to go and expose thought crimes?
That's a thought crime. See, we do thought crimes, that's a thought crime. Or here in Jersey, as we would say it, a thought crime.
Oh dear. Charlie looks
Charlie,
sad.
Do you get it yet?
Charlie's really saddened. We've ruined Charlie's day.
I'm you've lost me at NPC. After that, I just kind of zoned everything out. So all right.
The education of Charlie.
Okay. Yeah. For better or for worse. So I probably shouldn't type in thought to Google. THOT. No?
Oh, you'll be fine. You'll be fine.
I learned my lesson with
Charlie.
I learned my
thought
lesson
is a woman who
holes.
Has many casual sexual encounters or relationships.
Glory hole, pleasure hole, bonus hole. Pig. What was it called again?
Yeah, bonus hole, bonus hole. We have bonus holes, glory holes.
THOT.
Thought holes?
Which of course stands for THOT. That hoe over there.
Always insightful.
And then we have the e-thought, which is just that, but electronic. And, you know, it goes from there, Charlie. You'll understand one day.
Okay. Any closing thoughts on this definitely unique episode of Thought Crimes? Andrew.
I just enjoy Charlie continuously getting educated by Jack and Blake. I think it's edifying for the entire audience. Please don't ever Google the things that we educate Charlie on. It's bad for your mental sanity and really your soul, but that's okay. It's important to understand where America is at and whether or not we should have lost the Revolutionary War, as Blake is suggesting might have been a solution. All joking aside, I think, listen, here's the big takeaway from this week, that ActCon was a massive success, that Trump and Vivek won everything this week, that DeSantis has some pivoting to do, that the DOJ is coming after us, and that Hollywood is still a deplorable, terrible mess, but I'm going to go see Oppenheimer. That's my final thoughts.
Jack, final thoughts.
I mean, Charlie, all I got to say is we got to stunt on these thoughts. We got to stunt on these thoughts.
Okay, Blake, any final thoughts?
My final thought is, you know, I'm just categorically correct. The American Revolution was a mistake. It led to TikTok. It's really that simple. Like if we would take an NPC video back and we would show it to George Washington, he would immediately have his army surrender. He would go back to his farm in Virginia. He would write a letter to the King of England apologizing, and then he would say that we need to not allow the steam engine to face any further development. We've got to stop the Industrial Revolution and its consequences in their tracks.
Okay, this was Thought Crimes. Not sure what kind of thought crime it is, but it is what it is, as they say. If you are interested in dating Blake Neff, we take resumes, freedom@charliekirk.com.
Every time.
freedom@charliekirk.com. Mission Mary Blake. Jack is in Auckland, New Zealand. That explains the delay. It's unbelievable. He's like in the next day already. So God bless you guys. Until then, keep on committing thought crimes, whether it be the thought crimes or the thought crimes. God bless and see you soon. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. We're giving away one free membership as a sweepstake. So email us freedom@charliekirk.com, your favorite part of this episode, and get in the running for a free membership at members.charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.
You've spoken and we've heard you loud and clear. We're proud to announce our brand new ACLJ Life and Liberty Drive. Our legal teams will be focusing on the issues that you, our ACLJ members, have told us matter the most to you: life and religious liberty. We're redoubling our efforts to beat back the radical left's attack on your constitutional religious freedoms and to defend the sanctity of human life. This is your moment to get in the fight. Every tax-deductible gift will be doubled. Join the ACLJ in the fight to keep America free.